new CBS Monday.
Federal agents!
Hands where we can see them.
NCIS Hawaii is back. New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violin Island, you got it.
Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10, 9 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+. Plus.
Get fired up.
Oh, yeah.
Performance-enhancing audio.
This is the State of Combat Podcast with Brian Campbell.
Oh, yeah, this ain't Bendigo, but there was a battle down under. You better believe the SOC deep in your ear hole with the box to break it down. I mean, this is our weekly Boxeo edition, but this might as well be the Jeff Horn, Timmy Zoo, instant analysis edition. Your boy BC sliding in them DMs with you, along with my co-host. Let's get a short intro here, but you do know he is a New York Times best-selling author, a featured writer on BetYourAss.com. It is Rafe Bartholomew. Rafe, I'm not going to let you lick it up, but
I'll lick it up and down like a stamp, baby.
Wow, pause on that. But here we go, Rafe. We thought that Timmy Zoo was going to bite off more than he can chew, but I got one word for Jeffrey, okay? Maybe three of them.
Yeah, right, Jeffrey. No, I don't think so. But anyway, it's good to dream, you know.
Wow, sent to hell, Rafe.
Jeff Horn. Who is that?
Who's Jeff Horn?
Nobody.
Rafe, I got so many respectful things to say about Timmy Zoo. We're going to get into it in this show. Wow. Do you have any message for all the haters? Our hardcores, not regular
fans. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm glad you brought that up because I do have I have so many different disrespectful things to say about the haters out there on social media, on Twitter, trying to come at us saying that we weren't giving proper respect to this down under boxing Super Bowl. Honestly, the most fun fight environment we've seen in months because of COVID. And we were planning this all along. You didn't make this happen, folks. Don't think that your pressure online last night made us jump on. We had this booked. All right. So this was going to happen. And
just a real man. Yeah.
That's all I got. I got nothing more to say to you.
I know. People are like, oh, you only get 5-minute preview at the end of the last show. First of all, the last show was like 3 hours, all right? Second of all, we got up early, breakfast at Wimbledon. It's time to get horned. And what other show is going to put their balls on the line, Rafe, and get up at 5 a.m., watch this crap, and then do a podcast right after?
No, but I guarantee you, there aren't many other American boxing podcasts, and there are 7,000 other American boxing podcasts, but 6,999 of them are not treating Horn Zoo like Wilder Fury.
Exactly.
Wilder Fury, too. We do that because we know what's up.
Fourth wall removal at CBSSports.com. I've been pitching all week. You guys want me to write a feature? You want me to write a preview? You want me to do a recap? And they were like, no, we don't. But I'm still here. I'm still here. All right. I say, hey, I'm doing the IA pod. A lot of different things I could be doing right now, Rafe. Okay. But shots rang out in Australia and I was ready.
And I was just going to Taco Bell and then I hear some gunshots and I'm like, all right, I guess Taco Bell can wait.
You're damn right it can wait. Okay. Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Sometimes right. Sometimes quiero Taco Bell, Brian, all right? And all you got to go get that chalupa,
look,
right?
Throw on the
Kevlar.
I'm all for that, okay? I'm all for grabbing a burger, putting my hand around a pickle, all right? Big pickle, in fact. But there were fights this morning.
So understand the pickle boxing is in right now. And it's a big pickle.
You did.
Oh yeah.
You're damn right. Rafe, shout out to our viewers, our listeners, whatever we're doing nowadays. We're back. We're opening the box. But, you know, our obituary, it's been written a few times. They might be right this time. The skinheads are taking over, Rafe. I want to be honest. I want to be forthcoming. I love doing this show. But there ain't no PBC Kate-to-Kate checks coming in right now. The skinheads have taken over the island, so to speak, and it's called Fight Island. And I want to continue to do this with you.
But, you know, there are headlines out there. Morning Combat expanding. Showtime and CBS getting in bed together. Luke Thomas joining the team. People are like, well, what does that mean? I'm not ready to die if you're not, Rafe.
I am not ready to die. And I have this to say to the overlords there at Viacom or whatever company owns all this stuff. Would you rather pay six figures for skinhead commentary or pay $0 for Rafe Bartholomew?
Because
that's the deal we're working with, okay, right now. That's a good deal for y'all.
Because CBS is willing to write about Hanzu.
Like CBS Sports. This isn't like, you know, Bloody Elbow or something. You know what I mean? CBS Sports fucking wrote it.
We would have wrote it. They just didn't. They wouldn't let me. But yeah, okay. So what does this mean? I still want to find a home. I still want to find a place, a sweatyarmpit.com, that we can slip in this every once in a while, Rafe. It's not going to make you rich. It's not going to get you followers, but it's going to get you some weird friends, okay? Like Alex Godinez, okay? That's what I'm talking about.
You got to stop giving Godinez the Kamala Harris treatment, man. You get it wrong in every different possible way.
You mean the Kamala, the Ugandan giant? All
right. Stop that right there. Stop that crap.
All right. Campbell's going to keep going. All right. All right, Rafe. I don't even know why we're here anymore, but because we love the box. We love this sick, twisted sport. And by the way, it's a good week to do this show. Povetkin and Dillian White reminded us why we love this dirty whore of a sport. Okay. So I'm excited to break that down. How are things over at, Bet Your Life? You doing good?
No doubt. You know, we're making money. I was going to put money on Povetkin. I mean, we were talking about this. I called the fight. I thought he was going to win. I was planning to drive down to these casinos in Detroit and throw a little, you know, cash money on my man, Sasha Povetkin. But I saw that Dillian White was in shape, and I just don't trust those damn judges. I didn't think that Povetkin was going to end that fight like he did. And so
that woman judge who had it even, please.
That's why I'm upset. All right.
Well, good for Sasha. He did not let any woman or man judges mess with his win.
I was expecting this voicemail from you after that knockout, by the way.
I know this game. You got to listen to me.
Because you called that shot last week. I said, look, bro, Dillian White going to send this Meldonium head down below, okay, in the basement, below the basement, the sub-basement of hell. And you're like, nah, brah, I like the amateur pedigree.
Look, I think that would be a little disingenuous because Dillian White was doing really well in that fight also. And it wasn't as one-sided as people, I think, portrayed it through the first four rounds for White. But clearly that fourth round, he was taking over and starting and looking like he was going to be in control and win that fight one way or another. And so for me to come in here with the full, who was it? Ernie Holmes. I know this game. I feel like that's not really true because that fight could have gone either way and it was ended by just a beautiful, beautiful, perfect shot.
Yes, a money shot, if you will. Okay. He let the shot go. We're going to get more into that. So full postscript. Rafe and I will be here in some form. It's probably not going to be called the State of Combat. It might be under the MK flag. It might be called Boxing Bro, Bang Bros. Is that name taken anywhere?
I've never heard of it before. I think we could probably use that one.
Okay. I mean, it kind of fits what we do on this show if you really think about it, right? I mean, it's not far off.
Bang, 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 bang. Try and stop it. Bang, bang. Here I come. Bang.
Maybe we can call ourselves like...
Not banging them.
Well, you like, know, you like the
feels
liquid
good.
Crack.
You just want to bang them sometimes.
So how about Cam Soda? You like the liquid crap, right? Right?
I don't like liquid crap. I like liquid crack.
Is Cam Soda taken by any chance?
I don't know. What does that even mean?
I don't know. But you know, yeah.
I have huge titties is his top tipper.
We've analyzed the tip and it is the top tipper.
Thank you. Thank you very much. This may end up being our last show, actually, off the start of this. But we'll see what happens there. You know, I don't even care if you review it anymore. I don't care. All right. I don't care if you like Morning Combat. I don't care if you like me. Okay. But you like the box. That's why you're here. Shout out to some of the box heroes out there, Rafe. Who is that man, Tim, that watches every fight in every country. Who is that?
Tim Boxeo is a marvel. I don't know how he does it. I've heard him interviewed on the Boxrec Gray podcast. He sounds like a normal individual. He references a day job. What the? How does he manage to do this? Talk about a schedule. Forget Dan Rafael's great schedule, which has most of the big fights. This guy, Tim Boxeo, finds fights on Facebook all over the world. He's posting from Senegal. He's posting every other day from some part of China. He found the fight with the Chinese guy who had the tattoo of the naked lady on his on his pelvis. What? I don't know. Hats off to him. He is up him. And Richard Dwyer, who we now know a little bit more about, are two of the most, how do they do this, what is their deal type characters on the boxing internet.
You are the boxing hardcore. You're not regular fans.
Right.
You're fans who keep track of the sport week to week.
So I wanted to shout out
some of the names I've mentioned. I'm guessing many of you have never heard of.
Well, you're damn right, okay? I have heard of.
They don't quite ring Rich. A bell.
All right, Richie. I have heard of Isaac Hardman from Down Under. Can't wait to get into that as well. But yeah, shout out to the heroes like Tim Boxey. I don't even know if you listen to the show. Robbie Rinaldi, all the old Carmine heads, Buffalo Bob, of course, Johnny Sig. Hey, Johnny Sig looks like a good hang. You think he'll disappoint us? You think he might try to touch
us? No chance that Johnny Sig would disappoint in a hang situation.
Yeah, I mean,
he lives in Vegas, all right? He lives in Vegas.
Hey, Johnny, this one's for you.
Would you like to shake my hand?
I'd love to shake your hand. You'd love to.
I would love to, okay? Thank you. All right. Shout out to Kurt Esquire. Shout out to,
Kurt Esquire.
He's got a great show at the Boxing Biz.
Kurt Boxeo Esquire.
Yeah. Shout out to Eric Raskin. Great guy. Him and I DM each other about Springsteen lately a lot. Okay. I'll be drinking beers in my basement with the headphones on. The vinyl is playing. And I'm like, Rask, dude. Holy crap. Right. Candy's Room. What a song. Sandy, bro. What a song. Does that make me like really lame or like regular 42-year-old lame?
I don't know, man. I am so out of. I don't know jack about Bruce Springsteen, and I don't hold that against. It's not a mark of pride. I am not an educated music person. I like what I grew up with. I like a few other things I've picked up along the way, and
okay.
That's it.
Okay. That's cool. I've seen your high school bedroom. It's very yeah.
Ooh, baby, I like it raw.
I mean, you probably didn't even own Wu-Tang. CDs, you probably had whatever their original band was, right? We saw what you were doing before you got famous by the hot dog stand. You were probably there, right?
Well, if not CDs, I mean, I did have some cassettes.
Did you have rap vinyl? Hip-hop vinyl?
Oh, yeah. I did collect some 12 inches, but actually I got into that after, you know, I got into that later as a teenager when I was trying to buy the really underground stuff.
All right. Well, I want to shout out ESPN Plus for giving us this incredible Australian card. I want to shout out the COVID protocols down under because they don't seem to care, Ray. If there was like 50K, no masks, all right?
I mean, I know that looks crazy to us, but from what I understand, they're doing a bit better with the virus down there than we have here in the States. Now, I believe I've read some recent news about numbers going up, so maybe it wasn't the best idea to pile everyone into that arena in Queensland for Jeff Horn versus Tim Tszyu, but hell, you only live YOLO, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
For that,
oh, yeah.
I'll catch the Rona for Tim Zoo's coming out party.
That's what I'm talking about. Shout out to Zach at Delivery_Man2, who of course is the voice behind the Unofficial Scorecard podcast in Australia. He was fired up for this morning's fight. Tom Canfell jumping in my DMs telling me well ahead of time that Tim Tszyu was going to win, saying he knows this game. He was right. I was wrong. I'm the filthy casual. You can have my hardcore card any day of the week. And by the way, shout out to Sexy Surge because he's back with a bang as well. Lot to get into. Big show today. Oh, no, Rafe, it doesn't stop here. This show may be folding up, but this week we're in your ear hole now. And I got some bonus audio coming your way later this week. Jose Ramirez, Freddie Roach, Victor Postal, Roberto.
Jose, what has he become, Brazilian all of a sudden?
Robert Garcia. South Coast Mitsubishi. I got all the stars on this show. Okay. Thank you. I know you don't do interviews, Rafe. Okay. And I know that you certainly don't do interviews unless you fornicate with the guy first. Okay. Yes. Thank you.
It's a good policy. It yes. gets you out of a lot of interviews.
Yes. All right. Now grab your nuts, grab your handbag.
So, you know, let's make it happen. Stop running away. Stop making excuses. Put your nuts in your handbag. Let's get to fight.
Let's get to fighting. Okay. Shout out to Eddie Hearn for the great backyard magic that we will break down shortly. The morning zoo portion of this show has come and gone. Shout out to, a great place to watch a fight, right? Right? RIP Hooters in Campbell, right? Dwyer was back on the horn. He was back on the horn talking about that this week you sent me.
And in a fight that I watched from Hooters in Campbell, a place that's no longer with us.
Shout it out.
With some fans who watch my videos.
Dwyer Hive.
Cotto looked magnificent. One of Cotto's best victories. Of course, you noticed in the fight, Martinez was operating on one leg. The leg that has healed halfway.
One leg.
Martinez couldn't move. He lost that fight because he was injured going into the fight.
Where's Homer? Give me Homer
the
in my
knee
DM.
Was not responding, campeón. I'm sorry.
The knee
did you hear Richard Dwyer mention the words equilibrium or shot anywhere in that beautiful, beautiful soundbite?
Say, player, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah. All right. Hey, look, we're going to pause. Quick pause. Somebody's going to come in your ear and tell them to listen to their podcast. I think you should, okay? CBS got some great podcasts, including this one. We'll be back right after this. Yeah.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus. Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.
We're back, BC Rafe Books, lot to dig into, and we're going to start that digging down under, brother, instant analysis style. It was the battle of the Bighorn. Right?
Is that a real battle?
Yeah, I don't know. It wasn't in Bandingo, but shout out to On the Chin, Alex McClintock. Great book to read to get you excited about life and Aussie boxing. But this was Timmy's night. No. The unproven, untested at this level. Yes, he dropped Dwight Ritchie with a body shot and the guy never came back. All right, RIP to Guy Ritchie. But Tim Zhu had not been tested on this level, Rafe. And he moves up to face the biggest star in Aussie boxing, the king, former WBO welterweight champion, Jeff. Okay, because you're Manny Pacquiao. You don't want to get knocked out and put to sleep by Joe Hahn. Hey, by the way, we had a great debate last week. Would you rather have relations with Danny S. Garcia or Danny with one N. Garcia? Would you rather have relations, Rafe, with Joe Horn of cell phone fame or J.O. Horn?
Wait, who is Joe Horn of cell phone fame?
Former Saints All-Pro receiver.
Oh, man, I don't. Oh, that guy. Yeah. That's tough, man. That is tough.
I'm picking Joanne. All right, Joanna.
Yeah, you got to go with that. Yeah. Right.
Well, look. We know this game. Timmy Zhu knew this game. Rafe, you could not. Shout out again for the plus for putting it on. Shout out to 50K in Queensland. Shout out to this event mattering to us this much and being this fun. Never could have predicted that there would be no rhythm. There would be no. I mean, look, it was a broken method at the end of the day.
No pressure
at all. It was, I mean, there was no shooting of anything. because Tim Tszyu was that good. What's your freaking biggest takeaway?
Man, I am. It's my biggest takeaway. What my gut, what my heart is telling me right now is that, yes, this didn't look like and close to the best version of Jeff Horn, but that doesn't matter because Tim Tszyu looked that good. It's premature. It could turn out to be wrong. I could look like an idiot. But Tim Tszyu looked so good, so composed, so mature, set up his shots, was not fazed at all by Jeff Horn just running into him and hugging him and doing all the horny type things that we see from Jeff Horn. And, you know, was able to control him when they held inside, was able to many times turn him and spin him and land shots off of those bum rushes. He looked like someone who has a real, real championship level future in the weight category 154 and whatever else is in it. I want to see more of him. I think that he looked like the real deal to me. Tell me I'm not. I'm overreacting if no, I am.
Drink the juice. Analyze the juice. Stick the tip in the juice. Because this was a tremendous coming out party, and I had predicted on other platforms, you know, Horn would walk through him. And if you watch the broadcast, all the legends, right, all the Aussie heroes, Mundine, Dib, Fenich, they're all like, you know.
Aussie legend Dib?
They're all like, you know, I got Jeffrey by stoppage, you know, and that was what it was supposed to be. And here's what's interesting. Jeff Horn's so easygoing, right? You hit him with a low blow. You hit him with something verbally. He always has one response, right?
No response. I'll respond with my fists in the ring.
Ice cold.
He had no response in the ring. He had no fists.
He had no answers.
Dude, here's the deal. He could not, like, land a jab. It was evident so early on that the speed and technical advantage was wide, that the gap was wide. So when that became evident, because round one was a little surprising, but you're like, okay, Horn's got to adjust now. I thought he was going to go balls out mauling, which he did to a degree, right? We saw the guillotine choke attempt. We saw the forearm shots. We saw him doing a lot of the stuff that he did to get Manny Pacquiao all kinds of uncomfortable. But sorry, I'm burping. I'm eating. I'm doing a lot of things you shouldn't do on a podcast. That's probably why they're trying to cancel the show. But, Rafe, I would never have guessed in a million years that Tszyu had the poise to stay with the game plan, stay with the technique, and calmly just counter Jeff at every wild leap in. It was those little uppercuts. It was everything you mentioned. It was all clean, short right hands, perfect stuff. And it was early, right? Morning bird call level, early, cuckoo, that you started to ask yourself, like, this fight's over right now, round 2.5. This fight's over, bro. Like, that was before the first knockdown. This fight might be over already. Like Uncle Glenn, like, because, you know, this school teacher, he'll walk into an oncoming traffic. You know, he'll do that all day. You may have to save him because Zoo's not going anywhere. And I think, like I just mentioned, it was maybe round 2.5 where you're like, Tim Tszyu is not going to crumble one bit. He's not going to get tired. He's not going to get overwhelmed. He's not going to get forced to counter the dirty stuff with dirty stuff of his own. He's just going to stay in there as the son of a legend and act like his daddy. Only his dad used to walk you down and take your soul. He's a little bit different. And I like in the post-fight interview when he said, you know, hey, my name's Tim. It's not the son. He's carving his own path. This was a monster win. We make a joke about the Aussie Super Bowls because, you know, oh, it's Horn and the Stripper Part 2. And by the way, jokes aside, Rafe, we do have to revisit. We should do a podcast just rewatching that fight. That fight was a freaking war and a classic. They deliver. This ain't the days of Wash Gill and Gerard Fletcher. There's a new dawn in Aussie boxing. And Tim Tszyu just had a monstrous announcement that he's not just a domestic player, right? We're not just going to get 50-year-old Anthony Mundine up in the bullpen and see if he can sweat off 40 pounds and shapeshift his way to a third boob in the Total Recall bar and come out reptilian at 154 and some kind of... No, he's ready for world-level stuff, okay? He would send your guy Cheeseman to hell right now, all right? He's ready for the world.
When did the Cheeseman become my guy? That is your guy. You are the man who calls Ted Cheeseman fights.
Yes, I
I do.
Yes. Rafe, I was like humbled, shocked, surprised, and actually happy. You know,
yeah.
You know I'm a Jeff Horn guy, but I was happy that like it was that like, dude, this was Mayweather Gotti. Tell me it wasn't. This was Mayweather Gotti, like, holy crap, right?
So are we now adding to the Welsh Mayweather, the New South Wales Mayweather? No, Tim Zhu does not fight like Floyd Mayweather, and I don't think he will ever call himself the Australian Mayweather. But, yeah, it was – even though it was a one-sided fight, even though it was not the guy that we thought – was going to win just based on experience and what he, you know, and the level he'd fought at versus the giant leap up in class that Tim Zhu was taking. There was something special, and maybe it just felt special because we woke up at 5 a.m. to start watching bad Isaac Hodman undercard fights. And we're just delirious by the time the main event came on. But I think it was more than that, Brian. I think it felt like a real coming out party, a real statement of someone announcing, hey, I am on the world level. I am not just some Australian guy you can ignore for the most part who will fly over to the States once, give a game effort, get his ass beat, and go back and fight Anthony Mundine 17 times, which is unfortunately what we, you know, the bias we have as American fans when it comes to a lot of Australian fighters, even Jeff Horn, who we love to some extent. Fits that description. Tim Zhu, it's hard to watch that fight and not believe your eyes that even fighting a version of Jeff Horn, like we'll say it again, I don't think was the sharpest version. He looked slower. He wasn't moving as fast. He looked like he was even kind of having problems pulling the trigger a little bit when like in the early rounds when he was trying to be active and pressure. It, like you said, no rhythm, no method. It was just broken. But still, Tim Zhu looked so good, and the power was there. Every shot was shaking Horn, who, you know, we've seen him hurt, but we've also seen that the man, you know, will do anything to defend his classroom. And God, we didn't even talk about those body shots yet. After the first knockdown, when he starts really, really focusing on those digging that left in under Horn's elbow, and Horn every time backing up, bending over, wincing,
dude,
having to
take
a knee a couple
knee.
Times. It was brutal.
He took the voluntary Kodo knee. I mean, Timmy Zhu was that sharp. Holy crap. You were saying, hey, guys, I know I'm hooked. You know, it's like, hey, we just banged. I don't want to tell you I love you on night one, but like it did exist. I'm sorry. I love me some Tim Zhu.
We both know it did exist.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well,
seriously.
You can say you don't know what I'm talking about, but
I'm seriously saying it.
And you know it did exist.
It did exist. He looked that good. And I don't want to hear any excuses because I watched all those interviews. And Jeff Horn all week kept saying, I'm in better shape than I was for the Pacquiao fight. Look, I know he's older. I know he's been through the wars. And I'm going to bring in Prince Nassim in a second to back up the tweet you had. But, like, Horn looked like himself, except for his voice. Did you notice in all the interviews, his voice?
Even before the fight.
What was that? Does he have the COVID and he didn't tell anybody?
It sounded like he has some kind of cold. He's sick with something. Hopefully he was COVID tested and came out negative. But he did sound under the weather just based on his voice.
Yeah, that's you know, that is we should have hit him with the
coronavirus. We pray that it be dissolved with healing, with healing, with healing. Your cervix, your penis,
what?
Your vagina,
what?
Your buttocks, your colon.
Would you have offered that to Jeff? I mean, you got to be careful these days.
I don't know. It's very, very confused at this.
It's danger.
Danger, no? The world.
The world is danger.
Danger, no? So, look, that part didn't feel like himself, but I don't think you can make too many excuses. But on the subject of Jeff Horn, and obviously he's 30, what, two? He's been through the wars. He's been there. Okay. The problem with him is when he's going to lose, he's still going to be willing to get his ass kicked double in that loss. And he's been through a few. So this is what you tweeted out about Jeff Horn. And to be honest, that post-fight interview guy, it seemed like he just like wanted to say it, but wouldn't say it. Kept teasing around the circle, kept circling the rim. It's like, dude, send that fist in there already and just say it.
I know this sounds terrible. I think he should finish. No, that's
that is too harsh. That seems too harsh. Because look, there's a period of Jeff's career he hasn't entered, the full-on shameless shapeshifter period of his career, right? Where, oh, there's another Aussie name who's kind of, oh, Hardman? Let me get some of that. Like, look, he's not done. He's not done.
Is he done? He doesn't have to be, but man, Brian, think about it. He has now taken how many consecutive beatings, some of which he won the fights in, but he has been in speaking of hard men, he's been in so many hard fights other than what? The time that he got to fight the shapeshifter himself and send him strangely to hell in one round that just didn't make any sense. But other than that, the Manny fight was brutal. He took a shellacking when he came over and fought Terrence Crawford.
Even the Gary Corcoran win, he took some shots. And I mean, on both Zarafas, he got...
Those were brutal fights. And this one was as bad as anything he's been through. I mean, this is rough, man. It's a lot of punishment. Look, if he wants to come back one more time and see how he looks... See if this was a fluke or in some, not necessarily not it was not a fluke, but see if he can feel better, look better, be sharper. I think he deserves he has the right to do what he wants. I believe that I will give him the benefit of the doubt in another shot, but if he doesn't feel and look sharp after that, then it means that he's probably diminished from all of these tough fights, and at that point. Has any Aussie fighter in recent years made more money than Jeff Horn fighting Manny, fighting Crawford, getting the big money cash out with Mundine? I mean, Aussie Super Bowls with Zarafa. They made good money domestically there.
Yeah.
He's got to be in great shape. You know, Joe Horn runs that household and keeps good. You know, my wife Camille handles the money. You know, Joe has got them in a good place financially.
I like you.
So
I like sex.
My wife is dead. It's nice.
I don't know, man. He's been in a lot of rough fights, and
he turned Zarafa into his Hello Kitty George Groves, you know?
Well, you know, I'm interested in this. Do you think we don't need to, we can backtrack a little if this is jumping too far ahead, but when we talk about the future for Tim Tszyu, does he start moving to the States? I guess he now on some level has a mandatory or moved up the rankings to fight for Patrick Teixeira's belt at 154, or, you know, there's still a pandemic going on. Apparently things are safe enough to have large crowds at a boxing match in Australia. Why not stay down under, get into some dirty Aussie business, fight Zarafa, fight Mundine, do the tour. What if he finishes the tour by the time he's 26 and then can come to the States and start fighting other world-class fighters?
Well, look, they just fought a junior middleweight, Horn and Tszyu. And the featured guy in the co-main event, and, you know, my guy Zach was in my DMs telling me, you got to look out for Isaac Hardman.
Get out of here.
And he's a middleweight. I know he only fought a six-rounder, but he fought a guy who went the distance against Dennis Hogan and Jamie Weech. And apparently Hardman is an ex-skinheader, and he made the switch. I mean, maybe that's the next young stud versus young stud. Or maybe
I have to point out Jamie Weech. I'm proud of him for keeping up the great Australian tradition of terrible, awful tattoos. I mean, Gil was notorious for the awful back tattoo. This guy Weech with like the two triple stars on his one on his elbow and one on his shoulder, both looking like they came off of a trapper keeper. I love Aussie tattoos.
I think he had the Pam Anderson Tom Gugliotta barbed wire special in two different spots on his arm. There, it was great. It was great. But look, I'm into Hardman. Okay,
they're both great guys and Hardman.
Maybe that's Hardman. A more down the road thing. Just real quick, Isaac Hardman did what he had to do. He walked Isaac Hardman. Excuse me. He walked JJ Barea down and sent him to hell. But do you think he's like Cheeseman 2.0, or, you know, I mean, he's a domestic guy, right?
I have no way of knowing. I didn't see anything that really jumped off the screen. He had a nice, you know, catch and shoot counter that knocked out a guy that, or knocked down and sent the guy to the end, into the process of being knocked out in the first round. A guy he's supposed to knock out. I have no, this is why I think we underestimated Tim Tszyu going into this fight with Jeff Horn, because you see guys like Isaac Hodman and Tim Tszyu on the way up in Australia, and you just think, well, I don't know what to make of this. He's just sending blokes to hell. I mean, these are bin men. So one day he'll step up and we'll know then.
By the way, this is becoming comical, this whole who is B-side bloke. Is that your burner? Is that my burner? Somebody tweeted that at me the other day. I'm like, you know what? That would have been a great long play trick if I could have pulled that off. Who the hell is B-sample bloke already? All right, he uses British terms all the time in our DMs, like bin man and, you know, and cracker. And there's pounds. We see pounds instead of dollar signs. Who is this clown?
He calls knockouts a peaches. He's nervous. Puts a lot of Britishisms, but also knows a whole lot about cities in America that most Europeans don't find themselves in. Seems to know about Tulsa, Oklahoma. Seems to know about Detroit, Michigan.
LA that expat Brit that you know in LA? Maddie speaks, right?
Oh, Maddie Conrad.
Yeah, is it Maddie Conrad's burner? Who is?
I thought you were talking about British Paul for a minute. The legendary Maidana fan, British Paul.
Oh my God, I wish people could know him. It would be a waste of our time to explain him. But just think of the most drunk guy you ever met who was willing to jump the barricade at Broner Maidana to celebrate with Maidana. The biggest Maidana fan ever. All right, thank you. One more thing on Jeff Horn before we close.
Jeff Horn. Who's Jeff Horn? Nobody. I got so many different disrespectful things that I can say right now. I don't even want to do it because...
Well, I got one more thing. I don't want to take away from what Tim Tszyu did at all, but I want to ask this honest question. Did Tim Tszyu just have a better game plan than Manny Pacquiao did against Horn's pressure, with more videotape to watch and maybe, you know, a more prepared, traditional, sharper counter-punching style? Or was Horn a 10 out of 10 in aggression against Manny and a 6.5 out of 10 in this fight?
I see what you're saying. I think the style does make a big difference. That's not Manny was never going would never execute the kind of fight that Tim Tszyu fought against anyone in any fight. That's never been his style, right? He's in and out. He throws his own combinations. He's not looking to counter like that. It just isn't that kind of fight isn't Manny. Now, at the same time, you know, we talk about Jeff Horn looking sluggish in this fight against Tim Tszyu. Manny Pacquiao looked about as sluggish as I've ever seen him against Jeff Horn when they fought, 4 years ago? That's crazy.
That's fine.
Well, oh, is it 17? I thought 16, but 3 years ago, Manny is in his 40s. Anyway, Brian, I do think that Jeff Horn looked slow. He didn't look sharp. It wasn't the best version of Jeff Horn, but even if Manny had been like old buzzsaw Manny against the big old Jeff Horn at welterweight that he fought, I don't think it would have looked quite the same. I think he would have won more clearly. I think he maybe could have stopped or probably could have stopped Jeff Horn, but it would have been Jeff Horn would have looked better because he would have gotten more opportunities to get some offense off. And Tim Tszyu he had every answer dialed up, whether it was, you know, tying up Horn whenever he got close and not really letting him work inside. And then also, like we mentioned earlier, sidestepping, turning, basically treating Horn like he's the bull and Tim Tszyu is the matador. And as soon as Horn, you know, got past him, bang, counter with that right. It was beautiful work.
Yeah. Hey, Glenn Rushton, take your rubbish dream theater style and retool it already. I was going to play this man sending Glenn to hell. Do you have a second?
Do it.
Mr. Rushton, you should come back and apologize because you picked that out of your ass, and that's absolute rubbish.
By the way, shout out to that awesome soap opera in the final few days leading up to this fight. Obviously, the judges weren't needed. Tim Tszyu took that out of their hands. But to find out that of the three judges, one was an ex-cornerman of Tim's daddy, and the other guy apparently was overheard at the hotel saying he thinks Horn's going to lose on cuts, and they thought the world was turning against them.
Glenn Rushton always going to bring an October surprise, so to speak, into fight week. I think we do have to mention, because Glenn Horn, as our British friends say, is all we've heard this before, this criticism of Glenn Rushton, and it's already pretty loud after this fight, getting some stick over his reluctance to stop that fight, to say, to tell Jeff, you've had enough, to take it out of his hands. Even when that fight was finished, it was other guys in Horn's corner who went to the ref and said, stop it. Glenn Rushton was still kneeling in front of him, in front of Horn, saying, I want to hear it from you. Tell me you're done. And Horn, like most fight, like pretty much every fighter, wouldn't go there. But I guess how do you feel about Glenn Rushton? Did he put Jeff Horn through too much? Did he put him in at risk?
Yeah, probably not.
That was the Miguel Cotto. Probably.
What else can I do? This is all I know. Yeah, probably a couple rounds extra, but I don't know. Rushton's a weird dude. I mean, to try to change him would be changing the magic and the mystery of the Dream House and of the weird the rainbow color like lightning bolts that he has painted on the wall in the gym there. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, the dolphin.
Yeah, he's gonna get that
the dolphin fountain. I agree. I think the criticism is fair. I also understand how with a fighter like Jeff Horn, who fights with those big balls, like a tough gang member, and who we've seen come back from being nearly knocked out. He has a little bit of Gotti in him. It's got to be tough to pull the plug on fighters who you've worked with for their entire careers, and you've seen them pull off these amazing turnarounds.
Yeah, so I'm going to give the Ball Sack of the Year award over there to Mikey.
Gotta give Mikey the Ball Sack of the Year award.
To Jeff, sorry, it's Jeff's night. All right, let's wrap that up. Let's roll on. Shout out to the great Eddie Hearns, Rafe. The fourth and final fight camp card last week on Days In was fantastic. Okay, it was a pay per view in Britain. DAZN picked it up last minute. I mean, of course they should pick it up. I mean, come on, when is DAZN? I thought DAZN was going to hit us over the head with good fights. I mean, who's Canelo going to fight? Tom, Dick, or Avni? So here, by the way, DAZN reportedly said hell no to Yildirim. So shout out to them for that one. Rafe, this card was great. Eddie Hearn has won the quarantine in terms of the visual of all these bubble or empty arena fights. And I know Fox is trying hard with the fake pictures of fans on the side. We're seeing. Have you seen WWE's new frickin' Thunderdome where there's like screens of fans' faces and people at home live sitting in front of their computer screen? In the crowd,
it's like the NBA virtual fan.
Yeah. It's just you could see them better, where the NBA is a little bit more like distant. You can't really make out who it is. Whatever on all that ish. I think Eddie had the best thing altogether, right? The grounds look beautiful. Did you hear that epic music they would play? Like the synthesizer as the guys were getting announced? It was like, don, 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 don. It was like an epic, like Hans Zimmer movie. You know,
see, that's the thing. It wasn't Hans Zimmer. It was good. Boxing synth music. It was not weird Hollywood strings.
It was great, and the fights were great. Let's hit that main event. This was seriously, it was one of those, this is why I love this sport, okay? I love this game, all right? I love Mike Tyson, and this was one of those moments in the great cliches of, you know, there's boxing and there's heavyweight boxing. Well, it's true, Rafe, okay? Because Dillian White dropped Povetkin twice and was on the verge of just outclassing him. And it was one beautiful left uppercut from the deep, dark depths. And this turned, in some degree, the fortunes of both fighters and maybe the future of the title situation at heavyweight a bit upside down. I put an asterisk next to that because you know how boxing is. Suddenly Eddie Hearns, the great Eddie Hearns, is getting on the mic going, hey, just talk to Dillian White and we're going to do the rematch. There's a rematch clause and we're going to make sure the WBC puts the stipulation back that the winner gets Fury. So who knows? But for right now, today.
Boxing is full of shit,
it man. Is,
man. I used to love this sport.
I used to love this sport. I used to commentate on Showtime. Oh, wait, I still do. But I wish, I love that man, by the way. That was not a shot at our guy. That was, you know, RIP to his run there. But Paul, I love Paulie. I love me some Paulie, okay?
He'll be back on UK.
He'll be back. I love that man. Thank you. Thank you, okay? Thanks, Paulie. You still here with us?
Thank you, man. At least some people got the score right.
Shout out to Alexander Povietkin, a man who, Rafe, has been very good throughout most of his career, but never great. He had that bootleg bastardized WBA secondary title. He fought like hell against Klitschko and the ref wouldn't let him fight. He got sent to hell yet looked good against Joshua. Like, he's been there before. He's cheated his balls off, most likely, dipping the whole bag in Meldonium. Yet, he's never been great. This is a great win against a dangerous guy on an 11-fight winning streak. And this, I think, you know, this is the mountaintop for him. It's like, this didn't win him a championship, but this was a, like, how you like me now? You know, y'all must have forgot. I'm still that guy. And it's crazy in boxing because Povietkin probably retires after this if he lost. Yet now he's going to get, at worst, a big money rematch, or at best, maybe Tyson Fury. Like, this is wild.
Yeah. And it's an interesting quirk because this heavyweight era, while it has been until recently very weak, and Povietkin is really the one of these guys who bridges both eras, right? He was the guy who was supposed to give Klitschko a good test that didn't really pan out and became one of the most infamous and hated on Klitschko performances, because it was so, it took the 11th round, they finally took a point from Klitschko for throwing and leaning and just really Klitschko-ing up that fight.
Who was that ref who ruined that fight? Do you remember?
It's always some guy. I don't know. So, but when you look at it, when you look at over the years now, the body of work that Povietkin has put together, and the, you know, the wins that he has, the fact that he's only lost to Anthony Joshua and Vladimir Klitschko, Brian, that is a really good accomplishment. He deserves to be known as one of the best heavyweights of this era, period. And it's unfortunate that he's probably going to deserve that notoriety without ever having tasted a real world title, but those are the breaks. It's a tough sport, and there have been, even though there were times when it was a really weak era, and even now we talk about heavyweights are fun because there's a lot of good fighters, but almost all of them are vulnerable in some way, and Povietkin hasn't been able to break through to win a title in the two big chances, but man, it's just an impressive career, and the longevity of it, the number of wins. Except for all the cheating, but it's boxing. I mean, shoot, get in line. Who isn't visiting a pharmacy from now and then? You know, I like to use the Ripper Fuel, and Povetkin, my hat's off to that guy. This was a great, great win at the end of a very, very strong career.
Yeah. And first of all, if you don't believe that we've been all doing doping from the beginning, you're crazy. And number two, you know, he didn't really ever have like an A win. But he's got a lot of B wins, like a lot of them. And, you know, shout out to Ajay, Anthony Joshua, for recognizing a lot of those after the fight.
If you watch Povetkin's knockout reel throughout his career, you know, you got like the David Prices, the Jonathan Dufuses.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that win again, that knockout of Jonathan Dufus was fantastic, right?
He sent that Dufus to hell. Fishing farm, buddy.
Where does that rank in the all-time Dwyer mispronunciations, right?
Right, and the storm clouds are out on Gervonta David.
From Gervonta to Urioris to Clitoris, you know, what's your favorite?
Okay, so look, Dwyer's mispronunciations are more epic because you could tell Dwyer is preparing his YouTube videos. I think he writes portions of them. You could track his eyes going back and forth to the screen in front of him. So the fact that he is preparing these, this is not AJ off the cuff. I mean, a lot of us will forget Johan Duaupas's name if we have to remember it all of a sudden. But this Dwyer's mispronunciations, Alphonse Funfar, they come out of the middle of nowhere.
Boxing folklore has it that Carmine Bastillo after a fight
I mean, you know, the great Bastille himself, Carmine.
Yeah, and I couldn't believe he beat Sugar Ray Robinson.
Wow.
Jacobs is a puncher, right? Boxer, puncher. Think Sugar Ray Robinson.
That's what we learned from Dwyer. You think Sugar Ray Robinson, you think Danny. You think Floyd Mayweather's left hook, you think Caleb, right? I mean,
oh, that's Danny's music. Yeah. When I see Sugar Ray Robinson highlights, I'm like, oh, is that Danny's music?
Exactly.
Is that Danny? Danny's the kind of guy who's running to the fight. He's like Alexander catching a cat.
Gross dick.
Thank you. Okay, enough of that Dwyer messing around there. Look, just a fun win, a great win. Dillian White has a stick. Do you say anything negative about White taking this chance? I mean, look, it's a payday. It was a big pay-per-view main event, but you know, he has the chance to lose that thing. He's been the avoided guy. He's the guy who had to go the alphabet route to get to the doorstep of a title shot. You know, he fought AJ before AJ was champion and fought great before getting knocked out. But, you know, he may end up not getting to Fury.
Well, yeah, at this point, I think it's I'd say it is as likely or more likely than not that he won't get to Fury, or that he may not even get another full title, a shot at any title, depending on how his career goes from here on out. I see it both ways. I don't know if I have a strong feeling about it, because I think it was pretty clear, and you know, the WBC, they don't care. They're not going to follow their rules. He was for more than 1,000 days their top ranked contender. They elevated Dominic Boobs Brazil for that stupid fight against Wilder. I think on some level, I personally appreciate the way that Dillian White went about his business and said, you know what, F these guys. I am going to keep advocating for my shot, but I'm not going to sit around and wait and let my best years go to waste and not gain experience in the ring because someone is telling me it's the smartest business move to wait for my shot. And maybe he would have gotten it, but they still would have made him wait for at least a year, more than a year. And most of the time he was never elevated to a true mandatory. He was just the number one contender. Why he couldn't become a mandatory at that point never made any sense, but it's never going to make any sense with the sanctioning bodies. And to me, I would rather see a fighter do what Dillian White did. And look, we also see the flip side of it with this fight. He's winning a fight and he gets knocked out with one shot, a beautiful, beautiful setup punch. And that's it. He loses his mandatory position. He's got to build himself back up. He has to recover from being knocked out like that mentally. And yeah, he's said all the right things so far, but we don't really know how he's going to recover until we see him in the ring again, whether it's with a rematch against Alexander Povetkin or if he tries to build himself up more slowly. Those are all the business reasons not to do it. But I appreciate that he put his balls on the line so many times and made a lot of great fights and won all of them until this one. Yeah, good for him.
Was bananas.
It really was. That could be your knockout of the year for all.
It is. Guys. It's got to be right now. I don't care what anyone else says, Brian. Talk to me a little bit about that uppercut. To me, it was. I'm talking about, you know, I like Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson, baby. And this is a comparison that everyone has made already. But it was almost the perfect version of the kind of uppercut you would see in Mike Tyson's Punch Out on NES, where the guy coming at you, your little Mac, you got your little bitch ass jab, and the guy coming at you dips to the side, boom, comes up, and if he catches you, you're flying back. And even the way that White went down was like the video game, where it's like he flies up in the air, pauses for a second with his toes pointed to the ground, and then goes back all just flat on his back, and it's like it was beautiful, man.
It's such a credit to his technique, his patience. I mean, he was getting his ass kicked, yet he still was able to land the perfect shot. And again, I don't want to overstate it, but I want to celebrate it. That was one of those, like, when I used to work at ESPN, right? I used to work a lot of overnights, crappy job, basement floor, work till 4 a.m., work overtime, not get paid for it. But there was, you know, we had a boss yelling at us, calling us swear words and stuff. Yet there was this one dude in the newsroom, Anthony. And whenever sports would happen, right? Like, we'd all be like, oh, man, we're not getting paid enough. This job sucks. And then, like, the college hockey championship game would go into overtime on some sick goal. And he would just stand up and scream, sports! Sports! And it was like everything in your life at that moment, the work you had to do, the anger you had for where your career was at, that you're mad that the boss just swore you out. You hit pause, Rafe, because sports happened. And you remember, that's why I'm in this game. That's why I'm willing to take this crappy job. That's why I do this, right? Remember that Boise State college football championship game? Or not championship, but that bowl game with Oklahoma, Statue of Liberty. Remember that? That was sports, Rafe. You know what I'm talking about? This, you remember that game, right? Jared Zabransky, you don't remember that game? The fourth down, the hook and ladder, and then the, no? Okay, sorry.
New York, man. We don't know none of
this. Yeah. Shout out. This moment when Povetkin hit that shot, it was like I wasn't a journalist anymore in that moment. I was just a fan. Sports, Rafe. Okay, that was a sports moment. All right? By the way, I often rank my top five sports moments. You want to hear them?
Yeah, please.
This is where, like, you remember where you were and the emotion of just being a sports fan was never larger. Number one. Kirk Gibson's home run off Eckersley, game 180.
How dare you? I hate Kirk Gibson.
So do I. I was a Mets fan. I
hate Oral Hershiser. I hate that team. I was so down for the 88 Mets. I love me some Daryl Strawberry and Doc Gooding.
My worst loss as a sports fan is still game 7 of the 88 NLCS. Hershiser 6-0 shutout. Still my worst loss ever. Hershiser made me hate Oral.
Well, I think you could let that one go if you haven't already.
I don't believe what I just saw is what happened. Okay. Kirk Gibson hit that home run. It was ridiculous. Number two, Leitner shot to beat Kentucky. Final 8, 92 NCAA tournament.
How are all of your favorite moments like when the worst annoying teams won when you knew they were going to win and you hated them? And
because it wasn't about my teams, my job, my fantasy player. It was about sports, right? Okay. You know what I'm saying? Number three, that Boise State game, which you don't remember and you don't care about. That's fine. Okay. Number four, Manny Pac-Man Pacquiao getting sent to the basement of the earth.
There.
In the fourth Marquez fight, right? I mean, you were there. Like, that was sports, right?
That was sports.
Okay, I forgot what my fifth was, but shout out to whatever it was, okay? Thank you. That's all I got for you on that. This co-main event, you know I was jazzed for it. Irish TV had me on for like a half hour to preview this thing. Delphine Persoon, that rabid raccoon, got a second chance to walk into oncoming traffic against the great Katie Taylor. And Rafe, let's be honest. Let's actually, like, I know you want to say, hey, make me a sandwich and maybe I'll watch your fight. All right. I know what you're saying. You know, like, you've suffered through suffrage, succotash, to get to this point. But, they deserve this platform. I think they elevated the sport, and Katie had legitimate questions to answer because I thought Persoon won that first fight of, can she handle this? Ridiculous. This person who is so, Rafe, I want to, at some point in my life, I hope somebody says Brian Campbell was as committed to either this cause, to this love of his family, to sports, to his friendship with Rafe, as much as Persoon was committed to, like, walking into punches and trying to win that fight. She is amazing. In fact, there's something, am I wrong here? There's something oddly, like, attractive about her relentlessness. Is that weird?
I don't look, man. I was just watching the fight.
All right. Anyway, Katie dug her heels in this time. It was a great fight. Corey Erdman thinks it's the fight of the year, this rematch. Okay. Last year,
their
first fight was in contention for that. It was that good. I was there at MSG.
Why does he want to disrespect women's boxing by making them get a fight of the year during this pandemic destroyed year where there was no other good boxing? Why would he do that?
I normally don't do interview with women unless I fornicate with them.
I don't know, but here's the deal. Katie Taylor, this time, she had an answer for that pressure. She, early on, the movement, the stick of the jab, the combinations, like, she fought brilliantly, yet Persoon still kept coming and still made it a fun fight.
She's like Jason Voorhees, man. I mean, she put in one of those willpower performances while taking and doling out so much punishment that it really was breathtaking. Kind of, not the fight really reminded me of it, but just the in terms of willpower, just crazy, like you said, rabid raccoon, Jason Voorhees still here type vibes, got me thinking back to that lightweight fight with Omar Figueroa against Nihito Arakawa.
Yes.
And the guy was just, he's still there. That little bastard would not go away.
For shout out to Figueroa's older sister, by the way, shout out to her. I'd love to join that gym down there in Texas. Number two, Rafe, I'm sorry. It's true. It's true while I was watching this fight.
You know, I got horny, okay?
Did you forget you were fighting?
I forget,
or did,
man,
you just love your wife so much?
Man, both.
This fight, here's why this fight was great. One, it was a great fight. Two, Taylor got elevated because she did what she had to do. Three, Persoon's still a hero in my book, and I need to watch whatever part of the globe she's fighting on next. And four, I think I'd move to Belgium and let Delphine Persoon defend my cité. This was great. This was true or false. I know people like Corey Edmund can write great narratives. This was a boon to the women's boxing game.
I'm not here to diagnose, oh, boxing needs to be fixed or women's boxing needs to be fixed. It was a great fight on its own terms. And one thing that it was that sometimes you don't see with, look, we all want to support the growth of women's boxing. So when there is a decent fight, like there was a week or two ago with, you know, Jessica McCaskill beating Cecilia Brakus, there's a lot, oh, close fight, very competitive, blah, blah. No, yo, I don't care. That shit was boring. This was the kind of fight that makes fans, that makes you fall in love with the sport if you already do, or makes you love it more if you already do, makes you fall in love with it if you don't already. And that's, it was just a straight up on the merits, awesome fight, great contrast of styles, fun rematch. And I wanted to ask you something, Brian. I heard this on the Kurt Esquire podcast.
Ooh, yes. Kurt. Yeah, Mr. Emhoff. Yeah. Attorney Emhoff.
Boxing Esquire with Kurt Esquire. he had manager Scott Schaefer on, and Schaefer was saying, and this goes to the 2 or 3 minute round debate.
Let me first say something, Kurt. Let me.
Yeah, it's different. No relation to Richard. Scott Schaefer is asking, do you think that if they had 3 minute rounds, that Persoon stops Taylor because Taylor was getting gassed, looking a little bit weary late. Persoon keeps, she's got that motor. It don't stop. Do you think that she margaritos her that fight has 3 minute rounds?
Tony was coming on in the rematch in MSG.
You know he was coming. You know Steve Smoker didn't want to stop that fight.
Oh, I can't wait for the whole card, but that fight, but after what just happened there, has got my balls tingling.
I was tingling the whole time. I think you might be right. I think you might be right about that. I'd like to just go to 3 minutes. All the women seem to want to do that as well. It's robbed Clarissa Shields of some knockouts. Let's be honest. She's not a one puncher, but it's probably robbed her of some stoppages. I wonder if this fight would have been differently because Persoon's just next level. There's just some next level ish with her. And you know what, Rafe? She's reckless, okay? I mean, she's absurdly reckless. I mean, she lives her life like those people, like those ex-gamers who do, like, backflips off of mountains with parachutes on their back. Like, that's how she lives her life. But there's some craft in there. Like, she lands some sneaky hooks and stuff. So, yeah, I wonder. But I love the humility from both afterwards. Persoon's like, you know, I thought I won the first fight, but this fight, Katie's the better, the better lady. So, wow. Wow, I love it. Thank you to the great Eddie Hearns. That was great theater over the weekend. Rafe, sorry to keep this train moving, but we're like 2 hours in already.
Pretty long,
and
yeah.
And I have to ask you your thoughts on this awful Fox main event. Sean Porter went 12 rounds with babyface Sebastian Formella. He did some Sean Porter things. He dominated. I mean, in fact, he landed the most punches he ever has in a fight. Formella, to his credit, was a little crafty and just had some balls. He took shots. We find out afterwards two things that aren't great. One, it's the lowest rated Fox card ever, and it's like 800,000 people, kind of rightfully so. Although, look, I expected Porter's star value to maybe bring more. But two, Formella made $25,000 for that? Good Lord.
People are trying to save money these days. Yeah, that is that. Oof. $25,000 is rough to be on a main event on Fox, even if it was only in front of 800,000 people. I guess that's why we're seeing opponents who we know have almost no chance of winning, like Formella going in, even though, look, Formella was an Olympian. He was, you know, a decent European level fighter. Like,
he's a bin
knows
man,
what he's doing.
Right? He's a freaking bin man. Get it right.
And he was brave, but there was no competitive basis for making this fight with Sean Porter other than we needed to find someone who's willing to take $25,000 to fight a top five or maybe what, top three, top four welterweight. So that part is disappointing. I don't look, the ratings are down for everything in sports on TV, other than the disaster of political television. Ratings are just down across the board. And boxing's, I've read some interesting commentary. There's reason to be concerned. They might be down worse than others are. Dana is killing it with the skinheads. Great for them. But what can you, this is the hand that the world has been dealt right now. This is the hand that the sport has been dealt right now. And yeah, we're going to get some crappy ass main events. And this was one of, we got another one coming up with Lara this week, right?
Yeah. Get Greg Vendetti. Come on. Come get me. You know?
I've had a great run, right? If the coronavirus is what's going to get me, let's do it. Bring it. I'm ready, Corona.
Speaking of Dana real quick, because I'm going to forget if we don't do it now. A topic I'm not willing to discuss this week is Oscar at 47 coming back, because we've discussed it a lot, and I'm just like, I mean, he wants to fight a Charlo. Like, get on with yourself. Stop it, okay? Oscar was a freak. We know that. Did you hear when Dana was sending everyone to hell Saturday night after that fight night card at the press conference when they asked him about Oscar?
Last one. I'm a good friend of yours, Oscar De La Hoya, has announced he's coming out of retirement to box again. I just wondered if you had any.
Cocaine isn't cheap. It's expensive. You gotta make money.
Thanks, Dana.
Yep.
Meet me on the low, Rafe.
You were telling me, Brian, that people were offended by this. Now, I agree, in polite company, that is offensive. It is not a good practice normally to make light of addiction, which is serious. Lots of us struggle with it or have struggled with it in mild and major forms. So sure, I understand that point of view, but come on, how, like, first of all, Dana White would rank maybe in the top 300 of most offensive things he's ever said. He's probably said at least 20 worse things about Oscar De La Hoya. And get in line. Who in boxing at this point hasn't made an inappropriate Booger Sugar joke about Oscar or John Skipper or any of the, or David Benavidez or any of the people who enjoyed a Booger Sugar?
But this is what I got for Oscar. I got fish.
Exactly. Exactly.
Thank you.
Speak to Angel. Get up early with the morning bird call.
How good is
and
Angel?
Talk to Angel.
How good is Angel at the end going, thank you? You know, like polite. That's very polite. Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay. Thank you. All right. I have stolen that from him. I probably abused that too much. Back to what matters or didn't matter. That Formella fight is trash. That co-main event, though, your guy, the man who puts the fun in the towering Infano, Sebastian Fundora, was in a real fight against Nathaniel Gallimore, only nobody told Fundora this ain't going to be an exhibition. I don't know if that made any sense. He kicked the crap out of him, and he stopped him, Rafe.
Amazing. I mean, I had started to lose hope in Fundora as a meaningful contender or contender to be after that Jermonte Clark draw, when he didn't seem to have a lot of ideas of how to deal with a guy who was going to box him and make it hard for him. And man, he just put a whooping on Gallimore, who even though he had lost what, three or four, it was all against good competition. He had that win over Jason Rosario years ago. This seemed like, I thought it was a trap fight. I thought it might be the end of the road. Hell no, man. You got to take Samson Lukowicz. That man, talk about someone who has the right to get on any broadcast and any podcast and say, you got to listen to me when I tell you I know this game. It's Samson Lukowicz. He knows that game.
Bitch. You know what he wants. Samson, every time I see him, I always say, where are the chains? And then I forget that he doesn't wear the Mr. T chains anymore because of, what's his name's, Magomed Abdusalamov. He stopped wearing the Mr. T chains after going through the Magomed situation. So I respect that. But number two, I always go, hey, Samson, people forget. You found Manny Pacquiao. He did, right?
No one forgets that. That's the first thing in every article. That's the first line to describe him. Who forgets that?
People. White people.
Yes.
Okay. White people.
They don't, because they don't know S about boxing, Brian.
Yes. Kill Whitey. Thank you. Okay. Yes. All right. Rafe, he's, by the way, he just recovered from a health scare. So shout out to Samson and his son, Nathan, and, great family there. All right. Rafe, what the hell was I? It's Fundora legit though, because this was a legit win. So I'm going to tell you some 54s that, and I want you to just say yes or no. From the idea of could he win? Not would he win, could he win? Are you ready?
I was born ready.
Ted Cheeseman.
Yes.
Wash JSK.
Yes.
Brian Castaño.
No.
Tim Zoo.
No.
Isaac Hodman.
Yes.
All right. Is it time to call up our retired friend right now? Is it time?
Which one?
You know, can you buy me some time while I look on the soundboard?
I'm trying. We have so many retired friends, so many disrespectful retired friends.
I've got so many different pages on this soundboard. Can you
weight category 154?
Yeah.
You're talking.
Can you leave my friend alone,
please? Ara is still there.
Please.
Oh, the rooster?
Yes.
Leave
wow.
me the hell alone tonight. Please leave her alone.
That might be the fight that gets him off the skunk and back in the gym, bro.
I guess. Look, if you can throw enough money to bring back the rooster, I'm down for that. Look, the rooster could fight Tim Zoo. Rooster could fight anyone at weight category 154, and I will be there along with all of Tehachapi.
Blair Cobbs?
But if
Blair
he says he's retired, then he's retired.
Blair Cobbs have a chance against Fundora?
Blair Cobbs is not a very big 147. I don't know how he would do against Fundora. I would pick Fundora. One thing, Cobbs likes to get on that bike, and he'd at least make Fundora chase him a bit. But I don't know how. I take Fundora in that pretty wide.
All right. Your boy Joey Spencer did something else too. Whatever. All right. I think he turned 16. I think that's what happened.
Shout out to Spencer Gifts.
Yeah, well, dude, Spencer Gifts was a wild place to spend a half hour at the mall when you were a kid, right?
Never buy anything, look at everything, laugh at all the boxes.
Because they always had that dirty corner in the back that you'd slowly make your way to, but you'd stop at the weird posters first, you'd work your way around t-shirts. They always had, like, bobbleheads before anybody else did. What else? What would you buy there?
I never told you. I didn't buy a goddamn thing. But like whoopee cushions and little like the fake turds, fart bombs, all like those little snap things.
Yeah, it kind of always smelled weird in there too. They should bottle that. I wish you could bottle the smells that we had as a kid. And all right. You grew up in the city though. I didn't know they had Spencer Gifts in Manhattan.
I never saw one in Manhattan, but I was allowed to leave the city on occasion and did. I probably got into inside of a mall outside of New York City maybe five times as a youth, but I did see the Spencer Gifts and it made an impact.
The other fight card of note this past weekend on ESPN Plus. Look again, hey, shout out to Evan Korn, small man, he's a ginger. You refused to follow him on social media, but his people put on a great card. The plaster of the local council, Rafe. I'm sorry, I think it's time to go full time. Joe Smith Jr. sent Elida the Storm Alvarez to hell through the ropes, B-hop style, in a fight that he was winning handily. Rafe, I did not think Joe Smith could author a complete performance this great. His tats look good. He was in great shape. He's kind of a handsome dude, too. Like, shout out to Joe Smith for kind of turning this thing around. That was a great win, a great one.
You got to listen to me when I tell you, Brian. I know this game. I know this game. Look,
did you call it? You called it?
I can't remember exactly how I said. I think I hedged a little more than I should have, but people were giving me credit on Twitter, so I must have sounded more confident in Joe Smith than my hedges literally suggested. But look, this is the thing. I've never been that high on Elader Alvarez. He's obviously a contender level fighter, but other than that win over Sergey Kovalev, and again, that was a fight he was losing and he landed a great shot against a guy who now we know doesn't have great punch resistance, doesn't really have much of a chin. Great, he got that knockout. Good for him. He lost that belt right away. I don't care that he beat Michael Seals. Elida Alvarez, I would say, there are a few high-level fighters that you can count on underachieving and looking disappointing or like less than you expected in the ring every time they fight than Elida Alvarez, whether it was against that when he fought Isaac Chalemba, when he fought Boutte. None of that. He never looked good to me. He never looked special. And Joe Smith, yo, that guy comes out. There was a chance that he was just going to get straight outboxed like he had against, say, Sullivan Barrera, Dimitri Bivol. That is possible with Joe Smith. But he's getting better. He's getting more confident. And yo, he put it on him. It wasn't early on. It was just, I'm going to march forward and throw these giant 1-2s. But then as the fight developed, he was landing sneaky uppercuts inside. He looked really good. I don't know what it means going forward, but it was a great win. And he's having, look, we talk about all this Clay Collard Fighter of the Year stuff. If we could say that for Clay Collard, shoot, you could say it for Joe Smith with wins over Jesse Hart and Elida Alvarez, ooh, both upsets.
Ooh, I like that. So what is his end game? And I don't mean cash out end game. I mean, what's his big fight?
So here's the thing. He's already lost to Bivol, who is one of the title holders. He is this was sort of like a four-man tournament for the vacate or the title that Kovalev lost and then Canelo vacated last year. So he beat Alvarez. Now he's supposed to fight the winner of Maxim Vlasov versus Umar Salamov for the title. But who knows when that other fight will happen. If it does, then he can get his hands on a belt. I think that would be nice, and I think that's a winnable fight. I would wait for that if I was Smith. Now, there's some people saying, oh, great opponent for Artur Beterbiev. Throw him right in there. Look,
if they do that,
we're going to see these limitations right away. Right effing way. I know people are like, oh, it'll be fun while it lasts. I don't know. I think Beterbiev is a big, big, big level up.
Is Joe Smith a top ranked guy, or is he like one of those DeGuardia?
He's a Joe DeGuardia guy. He's an Algeria guy.
See, I wonder if this means they should take him seriously now. And what that means is rather than use him as an opponent, you know, shine him up a little bit.
Yeah, get him some cans.
Cans necessarily. I mean, people that will help make him famous. And there is a location where you can find people like that, Rafe, okay?
He belongs on my crime channel here on
YouTube. Thank you. That's okay. Exactly where I was going.
Name for
preach.
You.
Sergei Kovalev.
Damn yes. Right, okay? Right? That fight would bang.
That fight would bang. It'd be really interesting because Kovalev we've seen his jab is still very effective, and that was what Alvarez was not using effectively enough to keep the distance between him and Joe Smith Jr.
You mean Canelo Alvarez or Storm Alvarez?
Storm Alvarez.
Oh, okay. Because Canelo fought against Kovalev and was victim to his jab for 7 rounds.
I guess, yes. I was talking about in the Alvarez-Smith fight. Alvarez wasn't using his jab enough or effectively enough to prevent Joe Smith from coming in and just beating up on him. And Kovalev, I think, could do that, but at the same time, his punch resistance looks worse than ever, and his stamina looks bad. We know that rounds like 8 through 12 for Kovalev are always going to be a bit of a crapshoot, or just anything could happen, right? I mean, Anthony Yard almost had him out, and in any case, that would be a fun fight where I don't know who I think would necessarily win, but yeah, and if Joe Smith did win, and he probably would win by knockout given his power, and he probably isn't going to get a decision over Kovalev. Ooh, that would definitely build his profile up.
Yeah, I would like that a lot. Shout out to last weekend. There's one name that we didn't mention, though, and that's the comeback we waited for. And it wasn't on TV. It was hard to find. But Sexy Sergio fought. I have a fight with a Spanish guy. And Rafe, he won. And I don't know where to go with this. The former middleweight champ at what, 45, 46? The knee responded. He kind of looked like the guy of old. The competition level wasn't high. He did get a stoppage win. And now we got Sergio firing shots at Chavez Jr., and I feel like we're going to get there.
Look, if they get there, that seems like a safe enough fight where both of them can make money. Good for them. I was happy to see Sergio look as good as he could in that situation. Got the knockout win. Still has power. Still has some hand speed. Still has good upper body movement. I don't know if I would go as far as saying the knee was responding, Brian. You did not see any of the vintage, and not that you would expect it to see at age 45 after several years out of the ring anyway. But I don't think that we did see any of the classic Sergio Martinez lateral movement, the speed, that thing that made him a next level fighter. And I don't think that's coming back. Now, we know Dwyer thinks that this was a pretty meaningful performance. I'm not willing to go there yet.
Does he think he's the master of the back foot? Actually, he's more of a front foot fighter, right?
Did you hear much of that? He immediately threw Martinez into discussion with Benavidez, trying to get our campeón murdered out here.
Yeah, look, you want to do an Oscar fight? You want to do
if you
want
to fight a guy over an eight ball? Talk to Oscar, not Benavidez.
Holmes, you're in the wrong part of the street right there. Rafe, I'm a little sad about this, though. I'm really sadder than this day and age of boxing streams and, like, the Plus picking up Horn Zoo for us. Like, I didn't end up giving this fight the love afterwards. I skimmed the highlights, but, like, how the hell was this fight not televised or handled differently? I get that Sergio doesn't speak English, that he's not an American star, but he's basically a Hall of Famer, and he was like one of the three best fighters for a while. How is DAZN the Plus?
Well, simple answer, Brian. It didn't happen here in the States, and it wasn't carried by a U.S. promoter.
MTK, pick up that crap. Even like Showtime, my brethren, like send that shit to LA.
Showtime used to put stuff on YouTube. Why not just do that?
I'm just saying that should have had. We should have known like the story around that fight, the interviews coming in, all that. And it was kind of sad to not have that. It was what it was. He didn't look like a killer. He won the fight. Whatever. I just want the knee to respond. If he wants to do old guy fights, that's fine. You need you to go pee your pants. Why don't I pause the show, all right?
Thank you.
And we're back. Rafe Bugs has flushed. So here we go, Rafe. I believe, did you flush yet, Rafe?
I can't remember. I hope so. I feel like a new man, though.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, hopefully we can get going and get this show back on the rolls. All right, there we go. Okay, that's good. I wanted to love Sergio more. Whatever. It was what it was. I want to correct two things on the record. Oh, sorry. When Martinez continues, if it's a, like, what network is going to be invested in him? Anyone? You know, if he fights Chavez Jr., who's going to pick that up? Does that have Days In written all over it?
Yeah, that does have Days In written all over it, especially because it appears that they're trying to pivot to a more international, global strategy. So, yeah, that would be a fight they could put anywhere. They could do in Spain or in Mexico or in the States somewhere and sell that to Spain, hope that they get some subscribers for Mexico. Basically, it does make sense for DAZN, especially since it just seems like Chavez last worked with Eddie Hearn and DAZN. It seems like it makes sense.
All right. I just want to say this just to say it, just to get it out of the way if anyone's thinking it. What are the percentage chances that Sergio Martinez goes to his answering machine and hears this?
Golovkin, you are next, my friend.
Is there any chance DAZN says, let's let the old lineal champ fight the new one?
I think there's a chance that DAZN might go for that, even though I think as a bargaining position, they've been trying to be pretty stingy about the opponents they would approve for Canelo. I honestly hope that if that fight occurred in the United States, it would not be approved by a respectable U.S. boxing commission, because there's no justification in the world why a 45-year-old former champion should be stepping in so soon with Canelo Alvarez at this point in their careers. But I think would DAZN maybe go for that? Who knows? Why not? It does have some name value. Honestly, has more name value than some of the better fighters who will be available. But I hope that doesn't happen. Yeah. You know, I did hear that Sergio is the angle he's working, if all goes well, is to get a big money fight with Ryota Murata, which would put him on ESPN in Japan.
All right, whatever. You know, whatever.
Look, if you have to lose to a middleweight sort of champ, Murata is probably safer than some of the others.
I just don't want to see Sergio like fight a Golovkin and get sent to hell. Have you thought about creative matchmaking for Sergio? You
know I haven't gone deep down this rabbit hole. What is on your mind? I mean, it sounds bad if you had to pause that long.
It is sort of on brand for the show today, okay? And I don't have it. Okay, let's talk.
Talking Jeff Horn?
Yeah.
Let's talk Jeff Horn.
What do you think? What do you think? Washed on wash crime. We do it at Suncorp in front of 50,000 with no masks. The former middleweight champion of the world against the second biggest star in Australia. What do you think?
And huge pizza eating middleweight Jeff Horn. Yeah, I'm down for that. I am down for that circus. I am definitely
into it. At least somebody got the score right. You can hodden up Duco Events on the line one. By the way, when he said bang it full of quarters, I didn't know he ended with you soft cock. I don't have that on my sonar.
He's saying, bud, you're not a hatch cock. My friend, you're a soft cock.
Wow.
There's going to be a lot of cock blocking tactics coming on here.
Yeah.
Cock blocking is going to be tactical cock blocking. It's going to be the name of this game.
All right, let's bring this jam home. Here we go. I want to correct the record on a couple of things I was wrong upon. One, I don't know if I said that earlier or that was offline, but Robert Garcia's training Jose Ramirez. Freddie Roach is training Victor Postal. I had that backed up when I talked to you earlier. Two, Tim Zhu was actually the betting favorite, even though all the old Australian experts picked Horn, as did we. And three, I didn't read this 2 days ago, but in light of that Povetkin knockout of Dillian White, Mauricio Suleiman, who will change the rules on anything, came out and said the WBC will not get in the way of Tyson Fury exploring the Anthony Joshua fight should he defeat Deontay Wilder in their trilogy. So that basically means that this whole WBC mandatory, White Povetkin, will they rematch? It doesn't matter because that's not next. The timeline has been broken by Povetkin getting the upset.
That is true. And while I am happy that it means we are likelier to see Joshua Fury or Joshua Wilder sooner, I also think that's kind of BS, right? How is this a fight for the mandatory position only for one fighter? When other than when a guy blows weight, is it, this the belt is on the line for one fighter? That just doesn't make sense. If you beat the other guy, you know, this is Highlander rules. You know, you would take his soul, and this really was a soul taking knockout, and you get to move on from there should you choose. Can you think, Brian, of other instances where a fight like this, a fight between two contenders, had rematch clauses like this one, I guess, does? Seems like when a champ loses his belt, we can have a rematch clause. But if you happen to beat Dillian White, who is favored to beat you, then you have to fight him again. What kind of sense does that make? Look, if they signed it and they get to make more money, good for them.
Yeah, but you know about boxing and ethics. Sorry to cut you off there. You get what I'm saying right there. Rafe, let's get into the weekend preview. Let's drive this thing back into the garage where it belongs here. We saw the battle from Queensland, but we have an interesting weekend going on. August 26th. What the hell date is that? What day of the week is that?
Today.
That's today. Oh, good God. On the plus from Wakefield, England, Lewis Crocker and Lewis Green are going to give us 10 rounds of welterweights for the Battle of Lewis. Is it going to be a Crocker? A proper cracker?
Betty Crocker.
Lee McGregor in the undercard. Is that Connor's brother?
All right. Is it? It sounds familiar, the name. I don't know, man.
Friday night, another Telemundo fight from Florida that you don't care about. The ESPN. See, maybe I need to get off the Steve Kim ESPN schedule and go on to Dan Rayfield's Facebook page. You're
you
right.
know you got to do that. Yeah, you know right. who. You know there's only one the man, and it's Dan the man.
Yeah, all right. Well, hey, Saturday, this fight matters. Bonus podcast this week, just a reminder, interviews with the big-time players involved. Las Vegas, the plus. Rafe, one of the best fights of the year on paper. Seriously, the greatest fight. Or not of the year, but of the quarantine. One of the best damn quarantine fights. Jose Ramirez, the BC, the BO, 140 titles on the line. Third time's a charm trying to make this fight with Victor Postal. Rafe, people like Jose Ramirez a lot in this. How much does your man Postal have left?
I like him a lot, too. I think that he, even in his recent losses against Josh Taylor, what, a couple years ago, and going all the way back to, well, he didn't. He just got beat by Bud Crawford, which
Taylor fight was good, man.
Yeah, look, if you just look at BoxRec and check out the scorecards on that, you'd be like, oh, Taylor was in control. No, if you were watching that fight, it looks like Postol dominates the first four rounds, or so not dominates, but just seems to be clearly ahead, even though judges weren't necessarily giving him those rounds. And then Taylor really needs to battle back in the second half of that fight and get a knockdown to seal the win and feel like he deserved it. And he did. But it was a tough fight. And Postol, we've never seen him, not come correct in a fight. Even, yeah, he didn't really go for it against Crawford, but that he was just out of his league there. Other than that, Postol has always been a tough out. And I think that he will be for Jose Ramirez, because, you know, he can box, he's smart, he's not afraid to dirty it up and hold, right? When he fought Matisse, he was just grabbing the hell out of Matisse, tiring him out until he got a chance to land that shot that ended the fight. And now Ramirez, I think we've seen, has a better fighting spirit than Lucas Matisse did, and that he's not going to be discouraged and let the same kind of fate come after him. But I think this, and we've seen that Ramirez can be countered and outboxed a little bit by a clever fighter like Jose Cepeda did. And Postol has a little bit of that with him. He's also super tall and weird looking and has interesting male pattern baldness. I think that could also be part of this fight, something that Jose Ramirez will have to deal with in the ring. It's an awesome fight. I love Ramirez too. I can't wait.
Ramirez is going to put on the pressure, punches and bunches. It's going to come down to that sharp counterpunching style from Postol. Will he give Jose Ramirez any reason not to be in that ass? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And so I think it will be a really competitive, fun fight to watch. I think a lot of us will have it scored very close. 7-5, 8-6, maybe a couple draw scorecards. And then the judges, the top-ranked judges, will read their scorecards.
Oh, how dare you? Well, this ain't PBC.
Jose Ramirez will retain his titles with a wide points victory.
Yeah, Evan Korn has probably already tweeted that I scored this Saturday's fight 120-106 for Jose Zepeda. Yes, thank you. All right. The Iceman, Victor Postol, 36 years old. So this may be the last major opportunity. We're trying to build towards Josh Taylor, Jose Ramirez. Taylor has a fight coming up against Thailand guy, I think, right? Song.
Yes, yeah, that is made.
King Kong Song
September.
Dong? Yeah, that was not disrespectful. Sorry, I just can't pronounce the guy's name. All right, maybe it was a little disrespectful. I take it back, okay? I apologize on the air. Thank you very much. Two wins in a row for Postol since the Taylor loss against guys you probably haven't heard of. Mohamed Mamouni, you know, whatever. All right, Rafe, also this weekend, Saturday on the Plus, Daniel Dubois going to take a seemingly unnecessary stay busy fight ahead of that. Why don't they just do that other fight already? The Joe Joyce Dubois fight. He's going to take on Ricardo Snijders, 12 rounds heavyweights. Whatever. You in? You in on it?
I'm in on Dubois. It's going to be quick with Dubois. We've seen Dubois against, in smash fights before. Squash fights. I knew it's not smash. No, not smash fights. Squash fights before. And, it's fun. It's over in two or three rounds, and he'll have another knockout. So, I like that.
All right. Also on Saturday, I think there's some question if this card will happen, but on CBS Sports Network, a cable channel I do subscribe to.
Oh, very nice.
From Biloxi, Mississippi. Remember Ivgen Kirchhoff? How do you pronounce that? Kirchhoff?
Kirchhoff, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, super middleweights. He's going to take on Devin Alexander's brother, the guy who got out of the can, Vaughn Alexander.
That's a fun competitive matchup.
I'd watch that business. Kirchhoff used to be a Mike Tyson baby. He used to promote him, right? What happened?
I think so, yeah. Well, he lost. He got upset by, was it Aleem?
I would tell you.
Might have been Emmanuel Aleem. He got upset, and then he went into what? He went into like some contender type show and was the favorite there, and he lost that.
He's 20 and 2. He lost to Brandon Adams in 2018. You're right. The contender champion lost to Emmanuel Aleem in 2017. He's stopped a bunch of guys you haven't heard of in the meantime. All right. That's interesting. I'll check that out. And then the other card is Saturday Fox, right? Big Fox. All right. Here's another one of these potential one-siders, but you never know. Arislandi Lara is going to defend his WBA regular junior middleweight title against Greg Vendetti. Now, before I get into this, tennis shoe wearing, Nazi tattooed, European guy he's fighting, Lara is 37. He's been in some wars with Castaño and Hurd. He just did a Boxing Scene article with Jake Donovan where he says, I want to give the fans as fun of fights as I can to close my career. Rafe, that's totally the opposite of the old Lara that we know. Now he has to fight action style because the legs are slowing down. Could this be a sneaky good fight, or is this going to be Porter Fermella all over again? Greg Vendetti, just so you know, 30-year-old, he's not some Italian guy. What's wrong? He's from Massachusetts. He's 22-3-1.
Oh, a real Tommy Carpensi type.
Yeah, he got knocked out by Michelle Soro in 2018, and he lost to some guys. He lost to a guy who was 3-13. Good Lord. He beat Yoshihiro Kamigai in 2018. Oh. They should have just got Kamigai for this fight, right?
Kamigai is washed, man. He was done. Him and JSK took everything from each other.
All right, this guy's a proper New Englander. Shout out to Greg Vendetti. I don't hate him anymore. So that fight's going to happen, right? If you got any thoughts?
Would you say that the Massachusetts guy is more to your liking?
I would say that. But no, I I've always loved me some Mr. America. What does he call himself? The American Dream, Arislandi Lara?
Look.
Have I seen him lose? Yes or no? Have I seen him lose?
I don't know if I have either.
All right. That's what I thought. Thank you.
Brian, I think that this will look like Lara's fight against Canelo's brother. Okay. He's going to beat him easily. He's going to send him.
I care about this co-main. You don't much, but Wash Alfredo Angulo in there against our guy, Caleb Truax of Minnesota Beer fame. The winner will get a title shot against.
Why?
It seems like, so this is an IBF eliminator. That means that's Caleb Plant's title. God. Oh my God. Are we slow playing the Caleb Super Bowl? This is what we're doing on PBC, right? We're slow playing the Caleb Super Bowl.
It seems possible.
Good Lord. Cause Caleb Plant almost fought Alfredo Angulo, but instead he.
And everyone was like, no, please. Let's have some sense and decency here.
Here's the deal.
They pulled it back. Now it might happen again. You cannot stop this train from coming through.
We thought Angulo was done, but he sat in the detention center there down by the border and then came out and beat Peter Quillin, you know? So,
did you happen to see Peter Quillin's recent fishing photo as a fan of boxing fishing photos? No. He has a classic out there. Oh my God. He's double fisting giant fishes.
I love Peter Quillin. I love him. Great guy. I love him. I don't care that people hate him. I don't know why people hate him. What? Because he's honest? Because he's himself? Why do people hate? I get why they hate other fighters, right? They
put smiley face tattoo on his shoulder.
So?
That's hard. That's just one of those things. You're like, really? Really, man? Way overhyped. Way overhyped. I am so. All of these guys who trained
him.
In New York and all the bankers loved. That's why nobody likes them. You go to Barclays and there's an entire front section is filled with Wall Street douchebags and they're all going, yeah, pity. Yeah, pity. Like it makes them feel like a man to watch some boxing.
I think it's because he gave.
These are all guys who get emasculated by Eric Kelly on the daily.
Wow. The great Alan Hearns Heyman told him to give up that title rather than fight Korobov that time, right? And then he got the title shot against Andy Lee, but it was a weird draw, and then he got sent to hell by Daniel Jacobs. So that's what happened.
Korobov's about 38 and drunk. He loves drink.
That is true.
Forgot that one.
Yeah, that is true. All right, hey, this is going to be
bad.
A good
Billy
fight.
Joe is such a dirtbag.
He really is. I am into it, though. I'm told by my coworker Brent Brookhouse of CBS Sports that I should tune into this cracker, this potential plus cracker today involving those Brits I told you about, Lewis Crocker and Lewis Green. So we'll see what happens right there. All right.
Amen to that.
That's it for the show. Check out the bonus pod.
You wait right there. You stop right there, Brian. I want to pick your brain. I got, for old time's sake, throw one thing at you. Something we used to do around these parts called
What Would It Look Like? Oh, okay. I thought you were gonna pull a who's that one-eyed fighter that we like?
One thing that he did wrong tonight, he just threw his load.
Thank you. Okay, keep going.
We did miss a load watch this week on the Fox broadcast. No, Brian, a classic. What would it look like? Because watching Tim Zhu this morning got the boxeo juices flowing big time, and this is one we haven't done. At junior welterweight, Manny Pacquiao fighting Kostya Zhu.
Oh, wow. Matchup Monday. Wow. I thought you were going to try to get Manny into a fight with Tim Zhu there. No.
Well, it got me thinking about, Tim Zhu's daddy, who I love.
That's as great. That's really, seriously, historically, that's one of those, like, as great of a fight as you can make, right? I mean, okay, maybe prime 35 Manny against Roberto Duran of 75 is better, but this is a great-ass fight. I mean, is this as good as Manny Valero, the fight that never happened?
I think it's probably better than that. I know that it was not as built up because...
Yeah, Edwin sent himself to hell that time. It's not fun. No. Dude, that's such a great fight. But, like, that short version of Manny at 140, so you're basically taking the guy from the Hatton fight, right?
Yeah, look, we know that he only had the one fight against Hatton, but could have been fighting there for basically his entire 47 run.
Like, Kostya Zhu has the answer, right?
Marquez
had the answer because he could sit there. He had to go to the Mexican pharmacy first, but he could sit there and punch with Manny, but he could humble Manny with that counter punch. Kostya Zhu has a stick. He had Zab Judah doing the Cabbage Patch there with Jane 80. I mean, am I crazy to think that Kostya Zhu could hurt Manny early and get him off of that pressure style and have a chance to win a decision?
I think that is unlikely because whoever did that to Manny before 2012, yeah, before he got knocked out by Marquez. Yeah, he got more cautious after that. But if we're talking about any version of Manny that comes before then, I don't care what you hit him with. He's going, even if you knock him down, hurt him, he just gets back up, pumps the, bangs his fist together and, flexes his jaw and then dives back in. Now, Zhu obviously could just crack him again. I think he could win by knockout. I think it's either, I think somebody's getting stopped in that fight, and it's either on a beautiful, perfect counter punch that catches Manny coming in from Zhu, or it's just the too much speed. He can't handle your speed. So before he had Zab doing the Cabbage Patch, Zhu landed some shots. Zab landed some shots. He looked like he might be in a he can't handle your speed situation. So I think one guy gets stopped, and it really comes down to, does one of those really, really heavy, perfect, crisp right hands from Kostya Zhu catch Manny?
Dude, I was just thinking of like Kostya Zhu as like unbeatable in his prime. Then I'm like, hey, remember that Vince Phillips upset knockout? That was wild, dude. I don't know. That'd be a great fight. It's kind of hard to bet against Manny at that point, but
yeah.
I don't know. I'm going to take Kostya Zhu. I'm going to take it. Hey, Rafe, I'm looking at a real quick Yahoo Australia article, and I did want to bring this up, and I forgot to. Where the hell was Kostya Zhu?
I read about that. He lives in Russia now. He has a new family. He's still in touch with Tim Zhu, but is not like involved in his boxing career.
It's the headline is "Ugly Family Split Behind Famous Father's Zhu Horn Fight Snub." That just means he didn't go to the fight, right? But is he?
I read that. It sounds like there is some, I wouldn't know about ugly, but some animosity between him and his ex-wife, Natalia, who is Tim's mother. But other than, and even that, the quotes in the story I read were just like, yeah, he has his own life now, and he isn't really a big part of ours here, which, Look, that's their family. They have some. I'm sure that they. But it doesn't. It doesn't. You don't read it and think, oh my God, I can't believe they're airing. It's not like reading a Joette Gonzalez story,
yes,
where the whole family is just airing each other out. Like, and it hurts to read. This is just like, all right, this family is not together anymore.
Okay. Tim did tell the Sydney Morning Herald, my dad supports me no matter what from where he is. Wow. Okay. I bet Costa was getting in that ass. That's why things broke apart. You know what I'm saying?
Getting in whose ass?
Well, that's the question, right? You know, I do favor the Russian in that one. Yeah. All right. Hey, we got to get out of here. Great show this week, Rafe. I'm willing to continue this nonsense with you, whatever platform we're on. Okay. I don't care if you take me back to Snapchat, bro.
I think we gotta go. We gotta do either Instagram or TikTok now to increase our audience.
I don't care if you want to do OnlyFans.
Pick the wrong platform, Holmes.
Do you want to start an OnlyFans thing for the kid, for the hardcores?
Jeez, I don't.
I'm more of a softcore guy, but if you want to go hardcore on that, you know. Yeah.
I didn't even think of that. That's another level.
Yeah, maybe we'll go Patreon and we'll get like 10 aggressive followers to just pay us. All right.
I mean, that, whatever. We wouldn't be much different for me.
To me, it's complete poppycock.
Thank you. Thank you, Richard Dwyer. Thank you, Morning Combat, my other wife. Thank you, the State of Combat. For as long as it's in your ear hole, it's coming. Okay?
Yes.
That was kind of weird. Follow Rafe at usbets.com, right? BetUS.com?
USBets.com, MIBets.com.
Okay. Wait, Raskin has a history of being an anonymous, I don't want to out him, but being, I don't want to pull him out of that closet, but an anonymous Twitter guy, right?
Yeah, there is some history there. I mean, he wasn't an anonymous Twitter guy. He wrote the Jim Bagg column at the Ring.
Well, you know, I wonder if he's the quality bloke.
I could see it happening.
Maybe James Foley. Maybe he's a wolf in sheep's clothing this whole time.
The Foley Minute is alive.
Wow. All right. The Folo Punch is back. For Rafe Bartholomew, it's your boy, BC. Check out my extra interviews this week. You know, why don't you check yourself before you wreck yourself, Rafe?
Amen.
All right. That's it. It's over. That's it. We out. Okay? Nothing?
We out.
All right. That's it. Thanks. We out. Okay.
New CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What are the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
A new NCIS, Monday, 9/8 Central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.